listening to a download from theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Number 502.
Hello and welcome back to The Outdoor Station, the UK's longest running podcast dedicated to the self-powered traveller. I'm your host, Bob Cartwright, and I've been producing this podcast since 2005. Have you joined my newsletter over on the outdoorstation.co.uk website yet? No? Well, please do so, as it helps me keep in touch with exciting changes which will be taking place in 2020 for us. And it also offers you the opportunity to suggest, amongst other things, future guests for the show. And today's guest has been named many times on the newsletter by people wanting to know more. Abby Barnes initially started life on YouTube as Song Thrush Productions, but as popularity and audience grew, she is probably better known these days under the banner Spend More Time in the Wild, with her weekly release of videos every Monday. Now, as a fellow producer, I can tell you this is a challenge in itself, especially as you also have to walk the trail, tell the story, and edit it ready for release. Abby describes herself as a long-distance hiker, traditional archer, bushcraft instructor, trail runner, and dog lover. She's a qualified personal trainer and producer of documentary videos, which many of us will have enjoyed, I'm sure. With a CV like that, it's hard to know where to begin, so I asked her to recall how the journey into outdoor filmmaking really began.
So I guess getting outside has always been a huge part of my life. So as growing up, I was very much involved in the outdoors. It was my safe place. I loved rock pooling. My family, we'd go to the Lake District every year, to Wales, to Yorkshire, just go out walking in all conditions. I only had like soggy wellies, but they worked for me. I just kind of fell in love with that feeling of freedom, the wind in my face, carrying everything I needed on my back. And when I say safe place, so I went to 5 different schools because I struggled a lot with bullying, and the outdoors really was the place where I felt I belonged. I felt secure. But it kind of evolved over time. And I suppose this is all in hindsight. I didn't necessarily really realize I had connection with the outdoors until like looking back. I just enjoyed it at the time. And as a child, you're very innocent in the things that you enjoy. You don't necessarily note, this is good for me. It just sort of evolved. So throughout college, just studying, I spent more and more time outside. You know, everybody would be out partying. And I suppose I was just the one always covered in mud and my cowboy hat, which I'm quite well known for, kind of came into the picture then. It's only really been the last few years that spend more time in the wild and just getting outside has sort of really become part of my identity. And it's just evolving every single day and I really try and embrace that.
Am I right in thinking you're in your 20s?
I'm 23 now.
Oh, bless.
Little bit scary.
After leaving education, I was for 5 or 6 years, I guess. The video aspect then, the media aspect, did you find that that was a way for you to express yourself or express the relationship you felt with the outdoors as you were sort of venturing further afield?
Yeah, so I guess what I should have mentioned really is the outdoors, so going back to sort of how it all started, I suppose my background, if you can have a background at 23, is conservation. So I became very passionate about environmental conservation. I started speaking up about the issue of the unsustainable production of palm oil over in Indonesia and Borneo and marine debris, so plastics in the ocean. So this was sort of 2010 to 13-ish, and I won a few competitions. I was able to go and speak in the European Parliament. I won a film awarded by David Attenborough, and I guess that was really the rocket forwards into, right, filmmaking is my thing. Because with those things, in order to communicate to a wider audience, I was like, I want to make films. And I look back at them now and I kind of cringe, but ultimately the message is sound. You know, we are all responsible for our actions. We have power, we have choices to make every single day. About whether we can act compassionately or whether we're going to act in a way that's going to be detrimental to the environment. But I found that with those videos, I was often preaching to the converted. They were up on YouTube. They still are up on YouTube, actually. Oh, don't Google those. I kind of just started filming some family backpacking holidays. So I did my first backpacking trip in 2012. So I was 16, did the West Highland Way with my mum. I just filmed that, and I filmed some ones in a few years after that. Basically, people seem to like those. So I kind of did more of them, and people like them, people enjoy them. So I filmed more walking films. And it was only really in 2016 that I decided to really take this on, because that's when Spend More Time in the World sort of evolved. It flourished into a thing about getting outside for the benefit of mental and physical health. So I set myself the challenge of walking all of the UK's national trails. So at the time, there's 15, there's 16 now. So they're designated routes all across England, Wales, and they vary in length. So I'd started off, I did the Ridgeway, the Yorkshire Wolds Way, and the South Downs Way. But I got about halfway through to the South Downs Way, and my mental health was really crumbling. Basically, I managed to push through to the end of that trail, but that was basically the end of the National Trails project. I just couldn't do any more. I wasn't able to work. I was just very mentally unwell. But I hadn't communicated any of that to the camera. And I felt like, why didn't I communicate to that camera? Why was I not being authentic? What did I have to hide? And I guess it was the stigma, the fear of being shown up. So the idea sort of came into my mind, well, I can't make films and not be authentic. That goes against who I am. And it was really then in 2017, 2018, 2019, where we are now, that I've really started to communicate honestly about my mental health journey and how getting outside helps me with that.
Mental health is obviously a popular topic at the moment. I'll say popular. It's becoming a more spoken about topic at the moment. And it can take different forms for different people. I've had my own issues with it. And I remember speaking to Keith Foskett, and he had certainly his issues as well. And I'm sure there are many others as well, perhaps listening to this, that have had anything that comes under the title of mental health, whether it's depression, frustration, just endless tiredness, whatever it may be. It's a touchy subject to sort of get into detail of, but I'd just like, for you to perhaps address it as you would do when you're doing one of your talks on your journey from the withdrawing that you've just described to actually getting back on your feet again and feeling confident to talk about it with that experience behind you.
No, you're absolutely right. Mental health is rife now. It's heartbreaking to hear how many people are struggling and struggling alone as well. You know, the stats of people who are struggling with isolation and, depression and anxiety, and how it's crippling our young people. I just want to pull people together and just encourage them, because for me, my mental health journey has had its ups and downs, as with everybody. You know, we all have mental health, and that can change on any given day and throughout the years, the different things that we experience externally and, of course, internally, how we're digesting things and processing things. So for me, I've struggled a lot with suicidal thoughts and suicide attempts. I've had a number of suicide attempts, with self-harm, with eating disorders, so a mixture of bulimia and binge eating disorder, with severe depression, just crippling depression, just can't get out of bed. I call it ceiling staring. It's just one of those days where I'm going to stare at the ceiling today. anxiety, not being able to go into supermarkets or get in a car or cross over roads, or absolute paranoia that everybody's conspiring against me. I've struggled with on and off with sort of psychosis episodes. So seeing things that aren't there and hearing voices that aren't there. And it's scary because it feels very out of my control. But what I've really been working hard to do is be compassionate to myself, I suppose, and understand that I have mental health, but I'm not my mental illness, if that makes sense. Like, potentially this will be with me for the rest of my life, but there is hope. And I suppose the times where I've been most vulnerable in my life is when I have lacked hope. And that's something you hear quite often with people who are struggling, is when things become hopeless, that it's difficult to sort of pick yourself up. But what I found, for example, for me, is different coping strategies, things I've been able to put in place, and the support network around me, the power of connection, how that gives me meaning and purpose. you know, I walk every single day. I like to write down the things that I'm grateful for. I'm very, I really, really enjoy doing my affirmations each morning. So I have all these different things in place that I do. And ultimately, managing my mental health is my full-time job. That's where things are at the moment. If I wasn't managing it, then, you know, I'd be in a potentially quite risky situation. And it is hard on the trail, for example, you know, still struggling on and off with disordered eating. So I laugh just because it's, I don't know, it's something I'm still really working hard on. But for example, you know, I'll be out on the trail and let's take the Rob Roy Way, for example, which I was on in September this year. So the Rob Roy Way has a basically the classic 70 odd mile route, which is a nice straight line, or you can add on a 2-day extension, which sort of makes it to about 1900 miles. And I wanted to do that extension. I thought that great filming opportunities, a nice wild camping point. Almost imagine it as a V off the main trail going up. But of course, I needed to carry supplies for that. There was nowhere to resupply. But the trouble was, I got to the point on the main trail, camped there before the next day I was going to walk out into this more remote spot and then walk back. And with the disordered eating, I ended up eating all of my supplies, meaning I therefore couldn't go do this 2-day extension because I had no food on me. So that almost, you know, essentially it sabotaged my full trip. But at the same time, I was struggling with a lot of injuries. And I think that was quite a good move, food aside. But trying to just work on all of that whilst I'm on the trail, whilst I'm trying to function is difficult. It's a balancing act that I'm working on every single day, but I'm always so grateful for the support I have around me. And I say support, it's not a huge network. You know, I have just one or two close friends who know what's going on. I'm checking in with them. They check in with me, and that's really, really helpful. But yeah, it's just, I think people sometimes find it quite strange that I talk about my mental health whilst I'm going through it. I think a lot of people hear stories of, oh yeah, when I had my eating disorder, you know, but I'm recovered now. Or, oh yeah, when I struggled with self-harm, but I don't do that anymore. Or when I had suicidal ideation, but I don't now, you know. But ultimately, for me, they're still there. But I'm not afraid to talk about them because I want to meet people where they're at, and it's scary, and I want people to know that they're not on their own, and that there is hope things do change, because for me this fluctuates. That's just how it is with the certain things that I've got going on at the moment. But I do stay hopeful that things won't be like this forever. But I'm just trying to keep the things in place and manage things as they are right now. I don't look too far forwards, if that makes sense. So yeah, I guess that's what my mental health looks like at the moment.
So it's all about strategies. And obviously social media isn't a great help sometimes when you see everybody else supposedly having a fantastic time when you're staring at the ceiling, as you say.
For example, sorry, just social media. That's one of the things that, like, I know for me, I'm very strict on. So my phone, people can only access me through text and through ringing me. I don't have any notifications going off. And that's a choice I have. So it means, for example, if I want to check if I have an email or Facebook or Instagram, I have to log on. So everything's under my control. They're not even on my homepage. So they're on the, you know, you scroll up and then you see all your apps. So it's taking control of the things that we feel out of control in some way, if that makes sense. And that's been quite empowering for me anyway.
Mm. Well, certainly the apps are designed to nag you all the time, aren't they? I noticed on your Instagram a few days ago, talking about Instagram, you posted you've renewed your outdoor first aid qualification. And it also, there's a section there which is a mental health first aider.
Yeah.
What does that consist of?
Well, that was a great course. So the outdoor first aid is, I would recommend anyone who spends any time outdoors just doing a little first aid course. I think it's really great. If not to keep yourself safe, then if you stumble upon somebody, obviously you can help them. You know how to do a log roll. That was quite fun. Hopefully you never actually have to use a log roll. But the mental health first aid is a 2-day course. I mean, anyone who works in a workplace, you'll be aware that by law you have to have a first aider. But at the moment, there is no law to have a mental health first aider. And that is something that the Mental Health Foundation are trying to change at the moment. So essentially, it's a 2-day course. You go in, obviously meet everybody. It's a very confidential space. And you cover all different aspects. So you cover, you know, some quite scary stats, to be honest, about mental health and how prevalent it is in our society at the moment. You look at depression, you look at anxiety, you look at self-harm, you look at borderline personality disorder, you look at psychosis. So I think those are the main things that you sort of talk about. And essentially, excuse me, just like with your first aid, you've got your Dr. ABC. In mental health first aid, you've got what they call ALGI is their little breakdown. So it's, oh gosh, it's going to test me now, isn't it? Like approaching the essentially it's how to manage a mental health situation. So if there's a crisis, this is the route you go down. If it's somebody who's struggling, you know, how do you approach that person? Then you listen to them. So that's the L. You're giving them support and information. Then you're encouraging them to seek support from family and friends. And then the final E of ALGI is to seek support from, you know, professionals within the mental health industry. So that's what that looks like, really.
Oh, sorry about that. It wasn't meant to be a test.
I didn't do too great, but
I think you passed. You're okay. Yeah, moving, I mean, people know you from obviously, or say they do know you. I should imagine they know you from your prolific video releases that you've been doing, slowly building up in number, obviously, over the last few years on YouTube in particular. But you've obviously also been active on the other social medias. But let's talk about YouTube for a minute. And we'll come on to what goes into some of these films in a moment. But for people who don't know, what is your challenge that you've been putting yourself through this year? Because I know it involves weekly releasing videos, which is a heck of a commitment.
It's a pretty big deal, to be honest. I'm not going to lie. Anyone who knows me, like, the joke, even my friend's son, I think he's 3 now. What's Abby doing? Walking. And she goes, no, editing. Yes. So my life consists of a lot of editing. But yes, you're right. I put out a new video at the moment every Monday. So that'll be 52 videos this year, last year. Although I'm potentially going to change that up next year. I just really can't bring myself to do that, though. But I probably should. So what that means is basically I go out and film day walks. So all around the country, different walks that people can do. And they go up online so people can get ideas. So whether it's the Lake District, whether it's, you know, Cornwall or wherever it is around the country, walking ideas that people can do, all sorts of levels as well. You know, it's not just about the highest peaks with the most stunning views. It's, for example, this Monday in November, I put up about the Liberty Trail. So it's a local trail to me. It's 28 miles and I walked it in May. And just being able to see, you know, I didn't go high, but just seeing all the different Iron Age hill forts, the churches, the stories behind the buildings and the villages that you're walking through. So essentially the Liberty Trail follows a route taken by some rebels for the Monmouth Rebellion. And it's just tucked away, you know, it's really overgrown, but it's so exciting being able to explore these trails that honestly are just on all of our doorsteps if you're willing to just step out and have a look at a map. So yeah, I put up day walk videos. I do tips and advice videos talking about different gear that people can use, or, you know, how do you plan your first walk and whatever people are looking for, really navigation, nutrition tips. And then I do the longer documentary series. So this year, for example, I walked the Cleveland Way, the Tour de Mont Blanc, the Rob Roy Way, and oh gosh, what was the last trail that I did? Completely blank. I did another trail. It'll come to me in a minute. but they're longer trails that I do each year, sort of throughout the summer period. And then they go up online. And usually these trails have some theme to them, something that I learn from on the trail. So for example, the Gritstone Trail I first walked in, so it's up in Cheshire, it sort of follows the western flank of the Peak District. So I walked it first in January this year and I had to pull out actually because my mental health left me very vulnerable. So I went back in May and I finished that and I called that film Showing Up. So throughout the film, I'm talking about how I learned about the importance of showing up, no matter how you're feeling, to just get up and show up. And how that benefits me. And then other examples would be things like the West Highland Way film that I put up is called Learning to Thrive, and how on that trail I was really reminded about backpacking is my element. It is where I thrive, and encouraging people to take the time to go to the places where they thrive. And again, like coast to coast, embrace the journey. I had a lot of up and downs with my mental health on that, and talking about, well, just keep putting one foot in front of the other. This is what the journey looks like. It's not quite gone to plan, but I'm going to embrace it because this is life with all its ups and downs. So they're the sort of longer films that I put out, and I'm very excited about this year's ones going live as well.
This is the Outdoor Station.
Sharing the passion, appreciation, and understanding for the outdoors world.
Well, Well, it's interesting you should mention the Liberty Trail, because actually that's something I wanted to talk and break down with you if we could as a project. Now, your name crops up many a time, I've noticed, actually, on the Facebook page, the Great Outdoors TV group. And it's quite interesting to see the number of people there who are encouraging each other, as it were, to produce their own adventure videos or whatever they've been doing that particular weekend, or going for walks or bushcraft or whatever. But I think the one thing that many people don't realise when you get to the level that you're at the moment as regards production and what goes into producing what seems to be a seamless 40-minute story about a very simple walk, I wonder if you could explain to our audience, really, the amount of preparation, the pre-work that goes in from a production point of view, and also the time that it takes. Because when you started that video off and you said at the beginning, yeah, it's only 28 miles, I shall knock this off in a day. And I'm thinking, you're not going to knock this off in a day and film it the way you've been filming it. I put money on it, and I got a fiver out of Rose. I knew you couldn't do it. But I know from my own experience. I know from my own experience what goes in, but I think a lot of people would be fascinated to know, actually, from your lips, as it were, exactly how much preparation you do. The other thing is, when you're doing your various walks and so on, you're very eloquent about the historical sections and some of the places you visit when you're doing it live, as opposed to doing the voiceover afterwards when you can actually check your facts out, as it were. So, again, that takes time to get that information absorbed. So do you do that just before you go to camera, as it were, and go, OK, I'll just double check the facts. Yeah, 1853, 1642. Right, OK. And then you actually do the piece to camera, or have you already done the research so much in advance of the walk that you can reel it off pat, as it were?
No, I think there's some really good questions there, and you're right, I do get asked quite a lot about the production side of things. So there's different ways I approach it, but as you say, sticking with the Liberty Trail, so for that, for example, I did a little bit of research beforehand, but there isn't actually a lot on the Liberty Trail online. There's a leaflet, a black and white leaflet, I have no idea when it was published, but it's kind of more story based. So it tells you about different villagers who joined the Monmouth Rebellion, less about this is, for example, Winsham Church. It was built in, 18 something, and this is what happened here. So often I will do a little bit of research before. So usually I'm there an afternoon just writing down some key facts that I'd like to be able to get in at some point, and they just slot in my pocket. Then I head out for the trail. So on the trail, I shoot using a GoPro camera. So I used to use a GoPro 3 Plus, but I've just upgraded to, I think it's a 7 now. Although my last 7 got dunked in the ocean, I dropped it on the Cleveland Way and I had to get a scuba diver to come and get it out for me. But that's a different story for another day. So I'm on a second GoPro 7. So that's my primary camera. And then I shoot on my phone and a Canon M50, so a little mirrorless camera now. I've made that smaller from my 70D, which is such a blessing. So I shoot on those, and as I go along, I basically just think, what makes a good story? And if I'm honest, I am so inspired by the things that I walk past. I tend to say on a day, so if I was doing a multi-day trek, then I usually film, I don't know, say hour and a half on my GoPro for each day of footage. So there's a lot of footage. So you can imagine on a 9-day trek, I have all that footage to look at and to cut down to make it a less than an hour or whatever length film I'm going for. So with the Liberty Trail, I had about, I think it was about 2 hours of footage on my GoPro alone. Then I had my phone footage and my Canon footage. Now, I know a lot of video producers do go out there and they're very strict with their video time. But for me, part of why I film is it's a record of what I'm doing and of my life. So I struggle a lot with dissociation, which means I don't feel necessarily very present. Even though I'm super engaged with the landscape, it's kind of like coming in, but not quite registering in a normal way, if that makes sense. It doesn't quite make the memories, they don't stick in my head. So having the film is great because it means that's when I can go back and really relive the experience properly, and I can absorb those memories and be like, that's what happened at that point of the walk. So I film a lot, but often things come quite naturally to me when I'm talking to camera, because I just imagine I have a friend with me. I really do carry the people, the tribe, spend more time in the wild tribe with me. I'm thinking of people, the interactions that I've had, the stories people have told me, and it's just like talking to them. But I do keep different screenshots on my phone of, as you say, different stats and things that I think would be quite helpful to get in. And if I get them wrong, I just don't put that piece in the film, or I'll say it as a voiceover. There's a bit of prep before, but usually a lot more comes up on the trail and afterwards when I'm trying to bring it all together and make a film that flows well.
And are you shooting in 4K?
No, I'm not, just in
1080.
Yeah, I'm awful with stats. You wouldn't believe I work with camera, really.
No, I mean, I looked at the Liberty Trail on my last year's big screen TV, as it were, and I was like, blimey, the quality is phenomenal. And I was trying to work out whether you'd 4K and downgraded it to 1080, or but I mean, that the stuff that's coming off the GoPro and the M50 is very very good, isn't it?
There's a few glitches with the GoPro, so I have lost some very good pieces to camera. Sometimes it just doesn't wake up, it just won't load, or it corrupts files. But then also, like, the stabilization sometimes randomly goes, so it goes really hugely shaky, so I can't use that footage, and the sound gets out of sync. So there are a few things, and I do get quite nervous with that because my old camera didn't have that. But as you say, it's a trade-off. The quality is brilliant with these, the color and everything that comes out. I really don't do much work on the footage. I'm quite blessed with that, because if I had to do color grading and things, I'd be a bit lost, really.
Yeah, you're also another art in itself. So finally, back to the technology again. I noticed on some of the videos that you've had that I think when you're in the Alps, you were carrying a tripod with you, and I noticed that some of the pans and tilts that you were doing were very stable. I'm getting geeky now. Very, very stable with on the Liberty Trail. So was that just the in-body stabilization of the cameras, or did you actually have a tripod?
Yeah, so again, this year I've got a new tripod. So I did have a little Manfrotto one. It is a stills tripod. It wasn't a fluid head, so you really couldn't pan very well. And nor is the one I've got now. It's a carbon one. It's really small, packs down to about the size of a flask. So again, it's not for stable and windy conditions, but it doesn't have a panning head. So yes, everything is handheld. And then I will pretty much always add a stabilizer effect on Final Cut Pro when I do the final edit. It does smooth things out quite nicely. Occasionally it roughs up the edges, you know, it makes it a bit wobbly in the image. And if it does that, then I just take it out. I'd rather people saw the quality image than have it all warped and distorted. So it's kind of a mixture of things with that, really.
So if people were to, as I'm doing now, I'm looking at your YouTube page, if people were to scroll back to what was the previous generation of camera gear that you were using, just so that they could have an example of how things have improved, how far back would they have to go? What would you suggest they look at as a before and after, as it were?
Well, there's been a few things on there, because I think I've got some of my old wildlife videos on there, like talking about this is a rabbit and this is a badger. and I was shooting on a handheld camera with a disc in it. I don't even know what you call those. And then I shot on some really fancy thing when I was at college, which was like almost like a broadcast camera. I think to be honest, even if you look at last year's productions, so the Coast to Coast, the West Highland Way, the Great Glen Way, and the Two Moors Way. So those are some key examples. All of those had the GoPro 3 Plus. It's only this year, sort of May time onwards. So basically from the Lake District that I started filming this year. So things like Helvellyn and Grassmoor, all of those videos, that's where I've started using the new GoPro. So I haven't really had it for that long.
Well, I'm sure that'll fascinate people who are interested, like me, a bit geeky about that sort of thing.
And you get caught off using 60 frames per second, though, but I don't know
how to do that. Oh, well, there's a conversation coming afterwards. I can see that happening. I mentioned Great Outdoors TV Facebook page a couple of minutes ago, and I put a post up there yesterday saying that I was going to speak to you. And there's been a few questions that have come in, one of which leads on nicely from what you've just said, really, which one from Rich Lane. And his question is, how do you fund your lifestyle? Because obviously you're producing endless, as I can see it, content here. But I do know from our previous conversation, you have numerous ways of having revenue streams come in as well as jobs, as it were, real jobs. So would you just mind explaining to people how you actually manage to pull it all together financially?
Yeah, sure. So I think talking about finances is really good. I'll absolutely love your podcast, but I listen to some other outdoorsy ones as well. And people are starting to talk much more openly about the financial side of things. And I think that's great, because it's empowering for people to take their own steps into doing the things that they love. So I've mentioned before that managing my mental health is my full-time job, and it really, really is. So it's the hobby, it's the walking, it's the physical activity that I've sort of turned into bringing in the money. So I work as a personal trainer. So I'm a qualified personal trainer and a fitness instructor. So I teach, I have a few PT, everything's, by the way, worth bringing in. Everything right now is freelance. So I'm self-employed. So I very much am in control of my own hours. And that helps me when I'm going away doing these trips, although I have to come back and hope that I can get clients. but yes, so I work as a personal trainer. So I do that one-to-one or partner stuff. I teach spinning and boxer size every week. So I've got some great classes going on there. So obviously they help. I do a little bit of website design and website editing for people. So for example, my local church, I do all their podcasts and things and upload that every single week. So it's bits of money coming in here and there. And then when it comes to actually funding the projects, so I keep coming back to sort of the four main projects that I tend to do each year. So I always run a Kickstarter campaign. Kickstarter is a fantastic way of sort of bringing people together, in my opinion. For me, I like to say it opens doors. It allows me to interact with people on a slightly different level. So people pledge a certain amount of money. That then goes in a pot and it all goes towards the project. So whether that's helping to, you know, fund train tickets or flights or get food in or buy some new equipment that I might need. So all of that goes towards that. And then people get rewards back for that. So whether it's a Skype call with me, whether it's a T-shirt, whether it's featuring in the credits, whatever it might be, they always get something back. So at the moment, that's sort of what things have been looking like. But in the future, so potentially beginning of the new year, 2020, I'm hoping to explore setting up a Patreon account. Patreon keeps coming up again, another sort of way people can get involved, putting a little bit of money in. But I really do like to contribute myself, if that makes sense. So obviously I need to earn money in order to get by, which is important, we all do. But at the same time, you know, I do live a very simple life. I don't have any huge expenses. I'm just, yeah, very simple. And it's just me, you know, so that's obviously very helpful. I know a lot of people have a lot bigger commitments. But ultimately, all I can do is adjust for my life, as we can all do. So at the moment, that's sort of the main financial thing. I suppose as well, I do talks. I do well-being talks and sort of inspirational talks. So I travel around the country, often go to workplaces and schools and colleges, talking about sort of my mental health journey, you know, things that people can be doing to bring mental health into the everyday conversation, just as we do with physical health. So I really enjoy that, actually. It's a fantastic aspect of what I do. Brings me a great sense of accomplishment.
Nikki McRae wrote that she loves your videos and she always makes you always make her feel more upbeat. I appreciate the way she speaks candidly about mental health issues. But her question is, I wonder how she deals with talking openly about mental health issues in her videos. Does it ever make you feel more vulnerable? Is there ever a conflict between protecting your mental health and the pressure of putting out the content or dealing with the negative comments or people giving unsolicited advice?
I think that's a really great question. It's something I still, you know, sort of am trying to find the balance with. But talking about my mental health comes back to, again, giving me that sense of purpose. It, all the pain and suffering that comes with it, you know, being able to talk about that and know that I'm reaching other people and potentially helping them to get through the next hour, you know, sometimes it's even the next minute, you know, the next day, whatever it looks like for these people. I mean, that sort of makes it a little bit more worthwhile. I often tell myself, okay, no, let's rewind that a little bit. So I've mentioned or alluded to before, I've had a number of suicide attempts, and obviously that alludes to very dark times. And I tell myself, look, if I'm going to stay alive, I want to do this well. I don't want to live in a shell. I want to be open and I want to be warm. And ultimately, I want to be vulnerable, because it's when you're vulnerable that you're really living, if you're being authentic and honest. And it is scary sometimes. You know, for example, you know, I'll put films out like the Coast to Coast film, for example. Obviously, it's last year's project, but I've only just got that out the last few months. There's a number of shots there with me crying, having a panic attack, and I was anxious putting that out because you never know how people are going to receive it. But 99.9% of people understand, you know, they're empathetic, they're compassionate, and that builds me up and that encourages me. And also the list of comments there, they're not just for me to look back on. Like, people can look on that and be like, you know, there is support. That, and that's what's so important about this campaign, is the community, is the pulling people together and knowing that there is support out there. There is love out there, and acceptance that life is a journey, and there are going to be ups and downs and difficult times, but we can work through that if we pull together. We're not on our own. But yeah, putting it out there, it can be quite scary sometimes, but I don't know. I suppose as well, I communicate well to the camera. I'm not afraid of the camera. Going into a social setting and talking about my mental health, I struggle with a lot more. I struggle with anxiety and all sorts of different things in that sort of situation, insecurities. But with the camera, it's just me. And I often think, oh, I'd like to do some trips where I'm, you know, doing longer walks with people. But there's so many worries in the back of my mind, whereas it's just me and the camera just having a good time or not. but I just talk to the camera. I'm open and honest. And it's a way for me to communicate. And then it's my choice if I put that up. So, for example, the coming Monday, I've got a video coming up where I climbed Ben Nevis. So I climbed it one day and then the next day. So I did it twice in 2 days. Ben Nevis, just finished the Rob Roy Way. And the first day I went up and did the CMD route, so kind of round the back. And I had this card. So all I had was this map. And it just showed basically going straight up from this mountain hut, straight up to join the main ridge there. And the cloud was coming in and I was halfway up and there's no path here. I had to jump across this river in which both of my feet got soaking wet and it was really fast flowing and then you got washed away. And then I'm climbing up this bank, which, you know, having done my mountain leader, that is borderline needing a rope. I knew I was in dangerous territory. It was very, very slippy, very steep. The cloud was coming in. I didn't really know what I was doing because I hadn't researched the route because I'd been on the trail all that time. And I was just having this huge panic attack, like huge dissociation. I thought I was going to pass out. And definitely if I passed out, I'd roll several hundred meters downhill on sharp, jagged rocks. But I filmed all of that. And watching that back right now, editing that film is kind of quite... I don't know. It's emotional, but I'm not going to not put that out there because it's real. And this is what real life looks like for so many people. But for so many people, it's in the dark. We're not open and honest about it. So, OK, I'm potentially putting myself out there and it's scary. But if it encourages other people to do that and encourages them to seek support, then it's totally worth it. 100%.
Yeah, I totally agree with you as regards making it real. The few videos I've done with the TGO challenge when it's been horrendous weather and you're just miserable, you've got to keep going and got to keep crossing the rivers. You know, people skim over that, but actually that's what it's really like, not the pretty sitting by the side of a loch having a scotch. You know, it really is, it's a hard slog sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, the trail as well with these films, the trail is such a metaphor for life, you know, what it can look like, the happy times when the sun is shining and everything feels all good, the times where your pack's really heavy and uncomfortable, times where you're just tired and you can't be bothered. Like, so it is just about that, putting one foot in front of the other and how time on the trail can speak to us. And I guess that's why I just keep doing it, really, because there's always so many things to learn, and being able to apply those and share those lessons as well is really important to me.
Which leads me on nicely to the question from Ollie Parry Jones, who says, obviously we all benefit from seeing your videos and following your stories and journeys on the trail, but what do you get from the experience of doing the filming and sharing the adventures?
That's a really great question, to be honest. I suppose, like I've talked about before, it's the memories. It's something there to log on a very personal scale. What do I get from doing the videos? I get life. I get access to life. I really do. I keep coming back to the mental health, but ultimately it directs everything that I do. And with my mental health, how it is, there isn't a lot that I could be doing right now. But spend more time in the wild and making these films and doing the talks and leading the walks that I lead. They give me life. They give me access to a new day. They give me community and connection. They give me courage. And strength and purpose. I keep coming back to purpose, but it really does all of that. So making these films gives me that. I lie in bed. Okay, I might be having a ceiling staring day, you know, just that crippling depression, that hopelessness, that deep pain in your chest that, I don't know, you're just drowning in. And there's no sense of perspective around you. But I can lie there for, I don't know, 5-10 minutes and the thought just creeps into my head, I've got to get that Monday upload done, haven't I? And lo and behold, I'll climb out of bed and I'll get to my laptop, or I'll go outside and listen to a podcast and I'll work on it, you know, because this is me. Like, I'm putting myself out there to do this stuff. it's difficult at times, but it's worth it. It's really, really worth it, you know. So I guess that's what I get out of it, and it really is as simple as that. I get life.
Ollie continues, and there's a similar question actually with Gordon Jackson, and apparently Gordon Jackson's got a problem asking a sensible question, but he's going to give it a go. Is she planning to conquer all the trails in the UK, which I think you did answer, you want to do 16 of them, or is she planning to go further afield overseas? And also, if you ever fancy going for a bimble with him in Shropshire, he'd love to join you. And Ollie was asking something similar as well.
Yeah, well, it's great. I get so many wonderful invitations. And I mean, that's why I partly run. So each month I run a wild walk, and I've got some big plans for next year as well. So people can come on those. We do a walk usually between 9 and 15 miles, and just a chance for people to sort of connect, and obviously to meet me, and for people to meet each other and to explore a beautiful part of the countryside. And it's kind of like just being in the film. So I talk about, oh, this is this cliff and it's famous for this reason or whatever that is. But there's so many fantastic trails in the UK. My original plan was, yes, to just work through all of them in the UK and not really look further afield. But I still would like to do that, definitely. Every single trail is unique. It is a trail for a reason. But I'm not being so strict at the moment with sticking just to the UK. So, for example, this summer I went and did the Tour de Mont Blanc. And next year I am looking at a couple further afield, but I do really want to commit to each year working through at least one trail here in the UK. The only trouble is as I'm ticking off the shorter ones, they are gradually getting longer. But I guess I'm craving something slightly more challenging. And I guess I'm talking sort of Cape Wrath sort of challenging. Some people would argue that that's probably not sensible with the mental health side of things, but I don't know. I seem to come alive when I'm really pushing myself, challenging myself. You know, I've got that stimulation around me, like I really need to look at the map right now. So I don't know. I definitely working through the UK, yes, but I am certainly looking further afield at the moment as well.
Cape Wrath, yeah, it's good. It's tough. Yeah. It would play havoc with your weekly uploads.
I think it will.
Well, I think we've touched on everything, Abby, that I get the feeling people want to know a bit more about you. And also you've given us, been very honest and given us a very detailed background as regards where you are and what you're getting from doing the film work, as well as obviously sharing the pleasure of being in these various places with us, which has been wonderful to see. I've got a couple of questions really just to finish off with. As you're a regular listener, you probably know what one of them is going to be. But the first one is really, you've been doing this now for, 6 or 7 years, I suppose, and really getting involved in long distance walks on a regular basis. Referring to the long distance walks, really, what has been your favourite piece and most reliable bit of outdoor kit, and what has been the biggest letdown?
So I suppose the first thing that jumps to mind consistently, because I found it really hard to replace it, is my mountain equipment Lahotsi jacket. So it's a waterproof jacket. It's quite heavy. I think it's about 400 or 500 grams. And I've been looking for something lighter for a long time, but I really like pit zips. I'm sold on the pit zips. So I tried some different wrap things and they just weren't cutting it. They leaked quite quickly, so I'm sticking with that. So that's probably one of my favorite pieces of kits. And of course, if I can have two, please, is my Salomon boots. They're the authentic Gore-Tex boots. They're not even sold anymore, but I bought a stock of them. So I've got just this box, several boxes of these boots, because ever since I've been wearing them, they're really light. They're not super supportive, so I don't use them in the mountains so much. But I've never had a blister with them. I haven't had a blister in 3-4 years, which is great. I'm very happy about that. Least favorite piece of kit.
Biggest disappointment.
Biggest disappointment. I don't know. The GoPro produces some good footage, but it is jolly annoying sometimes. biggest disappointment. I suppose one of the biggest issues I'm having at the moment is tents. So I'm a big Hilleberg fan, as many people who might follow my videos will know, but I'm struggling so much with condensation on every single tent. And I tried the Terra Nova Laser Compact one this year on the Tour de Mont Blanc, and I didn't have any condensation, and that was just the most heavenly experience. Who knew backpacking could be like that? but so I suppose my tents at the moment are letting me down a little bit, because I'm always very wet, even if it's dry outside.
You've got, did I not see that you've got an Enan though?
And yes, I do. And again, condensation has just been pretty dire.
Really? Because so, I thought the flaps at each end unzip completely, don't they?
Yeah, it's supposed to help, but I mean, my wet sleeping bag is testament that it hasn't helped.
Oh, that's a shame. Okay.
It's not where I'm pitching either. I'll just add that in.
Okay, so our final question then, you know what's coming. Of all the things I could have asked you about this exciting life that you've had over the last few years, what should I have asked you?
I knew you were going to ask that. And I tried to think of something all day and I failed miserably. off the top of my head, what should you have asked me? You should have asked me. This is so difficult. what has been one of my all-time highlights on the trail? There you go. That'll do. Is that a question?
Okay, so question. Now give us the answer.
Oh, okay. one of my all-time highlights of being on the trail, I think actually it was when I climbed Kilimanjaro in 2014. So I was 18 years old. I'd just finished college. And 2 weeks before finishing, I got an email asking to come and climb Kilimanjaro to produce a film about climate change, talking about how in the last 20 years, 70% of the mountains glaciers have disappeared. And that for me was a real eye-opening experience. I failed so miserably on that. Well, failed is the wrong term, but a lot of things went wrong on that trip. But reaching the top, despite having altitude sickness, despite having killed all my cameras, despite mental health, X, Y, and Z, and that sunrise, and actually being present, so not being dissociated at that very point, was a real life highlight for me, definitely.
What a fascinating story, and thanks to Abby for being so open and honest about all aspects of her life. You can follow her activity by visiting her website, songthrushproductions.co.uk, or by dropping by the outdoorstation.co.uk website, where all the links to the various social media connections can be found. And of course, you can join our newsletter if you haven't already to suggest future guests. Now, it's late Thursday evening as I record this voiceover, and this needs to be edited and launched Friday morning at 5 a.m. So I had better get on with it. Until next time, folks, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.